Live from our nation's capital, it's the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop from Washington. I'm your host, Mark Levine, reporting live from, well, just across the river. I can see D.C. from my house. I'm actually reporting in Alexandria, Virginia, my hometown. And you may have noticed a new set around me. That's because it's my house. I'm actually sitting at my desk. That's a new change from last year. I will still go in the studio from time to time when I have guests, but when I don't have guests, hey, why not use new technology and be at home? I will be this year every Thursday live, so you're hearing me live now, and you'll be hearing me every Thursday from now through the end of the year. I am back from my time serving as your delegate, if you live in Northern Virginia. Well, Alexandria, Arlington, Fairfax, in the Virginia General Assembly. I proudly serve from January to March or so every year, and then come on the radio from April to December. So I am glad to be back. Obviously, there's a lot to talk about. And I've been thinking about all the news of this week, and really, has it been 2 years? It has been. Hey, we're past the halfway point, folks. Past the halfway point. Counting. I remember I was like, okay, it's a quarter done. The United States is still here. Okay, that's the third done. Okay, now we're half done. We haven't collapsed yet. But I've been thinking about, well, all of Trump's policies, whether it's on immigration or his taxes or the Mueller report or, well, the Federal Reserve. And the one thing that's consistent with Donald Trump. And you might say, well, nothing's consistent with Donald Trump. No. There are some things that are consistent. There's his narcissism, his corruption, his lack of full mental capacities. That's all pretty consistent. But the one thing I think that's most consistent of all is his lawlessness. This is a president who fundamentally hates the law, fundamentally believes he's above the law, fundamentally hates the Constitution, fundamentally hates democracy, hates equal protection under the law. Now, if you look at our founding documents, look at the Declaration of Independence that says all men are created equal, and you look at our Constitution, and you might say, well, that's what America is. We're not a country based on a single race or religion or ethnicity. Heck, we're not even majority English anymore. We come from all over the world. So what binds us together? What made this immigrant nation strong, given that 99% of us are not descended from the Native Americans who began here? I would say it is those principles, the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution, the very things that this president hates. In the purge this week of the Homeland Security Department, it appears that Donald Trump did not believe his department was being tough enough on immigrant children. Yes, we had separated them from their parents forcibly while they're crying and begging for their mommies and daddies. In some cases, they were too young to ever recognize their parents, know their own names, see them again. And we put them in deplorable conditions. Maybe that's what the word deplorable that Hillary was talking about. Put them in deplorable conditions, sleeping on hard concrete floors with these aluminum foil blankets. You ever tried to make a blanket out of aluminum foil? It's not easy. And feeding them very little, sometimes overheating them, sometimes chilling them, and sometimes killing them. Several children have died separate from their parents. Sure, it had something to do with some illness untreated, but it might also have to do with the incredible stress a 1 or 2 or 3 or 5 or 8-year-old finds when she or he is forcibly separated from his or her parents. That policy, the policy of be as cruel as you can possibly be in the hopes that people will stop coming here, was not considered tough enough for our president. His Homeland Security Director, Kirstjen Nielsen, known for implementing this incredibly cruel policy. And just to compare, the United States has already apologized for the internment of Japanese Americans during World War II. We pulled Japanese Americans out of their homes and put them in camps. But to our credit, we did let parents stay with kids. So this is worse. I get it. Donald Trump and his racist guru, Stephen Miller, fundamentally want to change what America is. They want to tear down the Statue of Liberty. They don't believe that immigration is a good thing, and not just illegal immigration. They don't believe political asylum is a good idea. Do they know American history? Have they ever heard of a holiday called Thanksgiving, perhaps? Most Americans have heard of it. It occurs in November. It celebrates the arrival of the Puritans in 1620, who came here for their own religious freedom. Now, some of that was pretty messed up. After all, they wanted the freedom not just to be free from British persecution, but also free to persecute others. So Roger Williams left them and came to Rhode Island and proclaimed true religious freedom. Thomas Jefferson, for all his flaws, was the architect of the First Amendment, which began in my home state, my Commonwealth of Virginia. The idea that there is no religion that is the state religion. The idea that you are free to believe what you want to believe. Indeed, until the 1920s, America had no quotas. When my family came over here in the 1890s and the first decade of the 20th century, the only requirements were you couldn't have diseases, and there were a few other ones. You couldn't be an anarchist or a polygamist. I think that's about it. I've checked the Ellis Island Manifest. There were very few requirements. And notably, we dramatically grew in size. How many Americans were here July 4th, 1776? How many, well, you know, you can't count the Native Americans, unfortunately, because they weren't citizens and we ended up decimating their populations. And but you can count the slaves. They were included in the numbers. The rough numbers of total people living in the 13 colonies that declared independence in 1776, the rough numbers of, shall we say, non-Native Americans. How ironic that those are the only ones we count, right? The people who aren't Native, the same ones who are trying to keep out people now. But, okay, ironies aside, they're about 2.5 million in 1776. 2.5 million. Now imagine someone in 1776 had said, we can't grow this fast. We can't accept 300 people who want political asylum here. Why, our population could double. We can't handle 5 million people here. That, or 7.5 million, triple. Well, our population has, let's do the math, it's gone from 2.5 million to 330 million. So up more than 100 times. And I don't feel too crowded. Do you? Maybe if you live in New York City, but we do have wide open spaces in America. In fact, we're one of the least densely populated country on Earth. So clearly we have the room. You may have heard, and I'm going to play this clip when I come back, Donald Trump before the Republican Jewish Coalition saying our country is full. Now, he didn't just say it there. He said it many, many places. But as a Jew myself, I was particularly offended. Not so much by Donald Trump saying those words. I've learned to expect only the worst from this. There's not enough words to describe him. Let's just say this self-centered, narcissistic, lawless beast of a man. But what hurt me the most, honestly, was seeing Jews scream, cheer for him, cheer for his claim that the country was full. because I know my history. And I know in the 1940s we had a U.S. president say, our country is full. As he also turned away immigrant children, they were Jewish children, fleeing death and destruction. And he turned them back to Germany. In fact, I wrote a poem about it. When we come back after the break, I want to play for you what Donald Trump said, and then my little poem that expresses how I feel about it. If you want to call in, my phone number, which should be working again, I hope so, is 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. I'll be right back right after this.
He's a Bible-quoting, Constitution-loving, flag-waving, red-blooded, liberal American. He's Mark Levin. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275. Voice of reason in an unreasonable world. Mark Levin.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levin. Did you hear Donald Trump before the Republican Jewish Coalition? Oh, he went on and on for an hour or so. I'm going to play for you the most chilling 19 seconds that I heard. Let's roll the tape.
And I told my people yesterday, our country's full. We're full. Our system's full. Our country's full. Can't come in. Our country is full. What can you do? We can't handle anymore. Our country is full. Can't come in. I'm sorry. It's very simple.
The president says our country is full. Can't come in. Our country is full. The Jews screamed. Republican Jews screamed in approval of sending people fleeing death back to death. But I heard different screams. I heard the screams of Jewish children in gas chambers, sent back there by a U.S. president who said, our country is full. It's my little poem. It is indeed what I heard when I heard that clip. I heard the screams, and I immediately thought of those other screams. Our country is full? Really? Now, I know Trump doesn't believe it's true. I don't know if Trump's minions believe it's true. They've shown that they can believe almost anything. We can leave aside for the moment the fact that obviously the country is not full. We have plenty of room. We are one of the least densely populated countries on Earth. And in fact, we have the lowest rate of natural increase, the amount by which the population itself reproduces itself, in American history. Did you know that? We need immigrants. Who do you think is going to pay for your Social Security when you get up there needing it? Because we don't have the number of workers supporting the elderly that we used to. You know how you do it? How do you get away from that? How can you possibly support Medicare and Social Security? Immigrants. Immigrants are a net economic plus to America and always have been. Ask yourself why we have the greatest economy on Earth. We're not the largest economy. We are the largest economy. We're not the largest population on the planet. China has a population 4 to 5 times our population. They are the second largest economy on the planet. They've got the numbers. We way beat them per capita. What is it about the United States that makes us great in the first place? And you know what, Donald Trump? We were great before you came in power. We're still great. We're maybe a little less great now. But when you think about it, the best way to solve a problem is to come at it with many different ideas. If you have 7 people who think exactly alike trying to solve a difficult problem, they're probably not going to get very far. It's like having one person in the room. I don't care how smart you are. You will do better if you can combine your talents with someone else who thinks from a different perspective. Well, we are the world. We can think in British perspectives, in Japanese perspectives, in Brazilian perspectives, in African perspectives, in Australian perspectives. We are the world. I know that sounds trite because it was a song, but because of the creativity of all the American minds together, we are the country where you can come out of your sauna and go eat Chinese food while listening to jazz and then go worship in your Buddhist temple while and then go home to your ranch and be on the farm and listen to country music. I mean, we have so much creativity in America precisely because of immigration. That's what's given us the strongest economy. And if you look at the economic statistics, you'll find that in times of immigration, our economic numbers go up. We're at record low unemployment right now. Immigrants can and do fill those jobs. But of course, these are all policy arguments of why we're all better off with immigrants. There's also a moral argument. We are the country that everyone comes to when they're in need. We are the moral refuge. People from all over the world kicked out of their countries because of their political views or their religious views or their race or just because they're gay or maybe they're a woman escaping sexual assault. Whatever it is, people come to America because, well, we are the land of the free, right? If you fundamentally don't believe in immigration, if you fundamentally don't believe in the freedom to be you in America, then you fundamentally don't believe in America. And since the 1940s, it has been illegal under U.S. law, under international law, to turn migrants away seeking political asylum. The reason why Donald Trump had to do a purge of his Department of Justice, his Department of Homeland Security, is because even as cruel as those people were, they still tried to act within the confines of the law. Donald Trump on the border told the border agents to lie to courts to say, the country's full, we can't take anymore. And the workers asked their bosses, are we supposed to do what the president said? And the bosses said, no, don't. You can go to jail for lying to a court. You will be held personally liable when you act against the law. Donald Trump is not the law, as much as he wishes he were. When I come back after the break, I want to explore all the ways in which Donald Trump's policies are really not a fight against liberals, against immigrants. Racist though he is, his goal is not so much racism as it is lawlessness. The man hates democracy. He hates our Constitution. He kind of hates America, don't you think? It's Mark Levine, 888-488-MARK. We'll be right back after this.
Thought. Back to the aggressive progressive, Mark Levine.
That's loud. Wow, really loud. Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I am your host, Mark Levine. Talking about lawlessness, I've been thinking about all the things that have been going on this week. And it's really just the president hating the law. So, for example, the question about his taxes. There is a law that dates back to 1924 that is quite clear. The chairman of the Ways and Means can ask for the president's taxes. This, by the way, comes out of the Teapot Dome scandal of the Warren Harding administration. Way back in the 1920s, the president was involved in corruption. Indeed, Harding was considered our single most corrupt president until now. It's interesting that Donald Trump is rated below Warren Harding in terms of presidents. But the Internal Revenue Code was fairly new in the 1920s. It had started by constitutional amendment in the teens around 1916. And so there really was no way for the Congress to do its oversight capacity, at least not easily, because the president said, hey, you know, I run the IRS, I'm in charge, and therefore you want the tax returns of the people who work for me involved in a scandal? Nope, not going to give them to you. I'm the prosecutor. You don't get to have them. But Congress has an inherent right of oversight in the Constitution. It's very clear. It's been that way for 200 years. So they made it very clear in a law in the 1920s, a 1924 law that says if the chairman of the Ways and Means, which is like the budget chair of the House or the Senate, requests tax returns, then he gets to see them. Now, it doesn't necessarily mean the public gets to see them, but it means that the Congress gets to see them. And really, since the 1970s, this wasn't necessary because every president for the last 40 or really 50, almost 50 years now, has disclosed his tax returns. But this president refuses. And here's the thing. He has no legal right to refuse. The statute doesn't say the president may disclose his tax returns or the chairman of Ways and Means may request tax returns. No, it says when Congress asks, the IRS commissioner shall deliver. But what happens if he doesn't? Well, I'm going to try to answer that question. I'll do it when I come back. I'll take one last break. Call in if you like, 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. We'll be right back right after this.
He's a Harvard economist and a Yale lawyer. He does not keep up with the Kardashians. He's Mark Levine. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275. In an unreasonable world, Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. We got our sound problem fixed. That's always good to hear. I was talking about why the president won't release his taxes. Well, I think we know why. It's because he's done a lot of corrupt things, and it will probably come out, for example, that he was not under audit. By the way, the president never actually said that he wasn't going to release his taxes. What he said was in the campaign that he would release it as soon as he's no longer under audit. Well, here's the thing. Even if he were under audit, and Michael Cohen, his lawyer, doesn't think he was, and frankly, I have my own doubts. But even if he were under audit, obviously he could release his returns, but audits end. Why didn't he release his returns from 2012 or 2009 or 2008? You don't think Donald Trump's kept copies of those returns? I'm sure he has. It's because we know he's been involved in petty scams and corruptions his entire life. I mean, this is a guy who made his fortune off scamming others. But that's not interesting. What's interesting is that the president is willfully disobeying the law. And I'd like to think about how Congress could enforce that law. A lot of folks are saying Congress can go to the courts, and they can. It's kind of a slow process. Go to the courts and get them to rule that the law is the law and they have to obey it. And that's probably the route that Congress is going to take. I wish they would do something else. Congress has an inherent power, and it's actually statutory power as well, to imprison those it holds in contempt. Did you know that? Every branch of government can hold someone in contempt. The president obviously has full police power. He's got all the troops at his side. There's lots that he can do. The judges can hold you in contempt. You go into a courtroom, you insult the judge, you start screaming in a courtroom, they have inherent power to control their courtroom, and they can actually put you in jail for contempt of court until you do the right thing. Now, you know, you can appeal that contempt, but Don't make a judge mad at you. They have tremendous power over you. Well, Congress has the same power of contempt. In fact, for the first 100 years or so of the United States Capitol in Washington, D.C., there was a jail cell in the basement. And they had the right, Congress did, and still does, to take someone who refuses to obey them and put them in jail until they obey. So all you have to do, Chairman Neal of the Ways and Means Committee, the House Ways and Means Committee, Richard Neal, is you've asked the IRS commissioner for the subpoenas, for the tax returns. If he doesn't turn them over, you say, okay, we're going to have a hearing, and we're going to vote to hold you in contempt. And if you hold him in contempt, you can actually send out marshals to grab him. In fact, what I would do is I would subpoena him to the hearing. And then at the hearing, right then and there, hold him in contempt, and then put him in the Congress until he comes up with the tax return. I would suggest, look, we don't have the jail anymore. They actually got rid of it for more office space. But you could find a nice office, nice cushy office. You give him access to the internet. Let him talk. You know, we're not going to hold him incommunicado. Let him talk to the press. Certainly feed him and all. But you lock the door at night. Give him a cot. We have cots, by the way, in the Congress. Lock the door at night and don't let him out until he comes up with Trump's tax returns. That's how you enforce the law. And I'd love to see it happen. I think that would finally be Congress asserting its power the way it could. What other issues? You may have heard about the Federal Reserve. Do you know what the Federal Reserve is? It's kind of complex. It does the nation's monetary policy, which means that it sets the money supply. It largely helps determine American interest rates. It's very important, probably the most powerful branch of government that you rarely hear anything about. Federal Reserve also began around the same time income taxes did in the last progressive era in the teens, 1913, under Woodrow Wilson. And it's critical because it's the American Central Bank. And because America is the largest economy in the world and dollars are the most trusted currency in the world, it is largely the world's central bank. And if it makes mistakes, like in the 1930s, we can have a Great Depression. It was largely, by the way, the Federal Reserve, along with President Obama, that brought us out of our second Great Depression. A lot of people don't realize that our economy in 2007 and 2008 was in free fall worse than in 1929. But the difference was the policies followed by the President and the Federal Reserve. Herbert Hoover tried to balance the budget, which is the wrong thing to do when you're entering a Great Depression. He didn't use monetary policy. And we had, well, the worst Great Depression in the United States and worldwide in centuries. In American history, I don't know about Great Depressions in the Middle Ages. There probably weren't any because the world wasn't as connected. But what happened in 07, 08 is President Obama stimulated the economy with his infrastructure program. And he used a very loose monetary policy to make sure that people had enough money in the system to borrow and to make the cost of borrowing cheaper, and interest rates were near zero. And this is all a lot of gobbledygook, I know. Sorry, I have a degree in economics. I can go into more economic detail. I won't bore you. Suffice it to say, this is a very, very, very important institution. And Donald Trump has proposed his Fed Reserve Chairman, Jerome Powell. He's not bad. I don't think he's good as the former Federal Reserve Chair. I think she was the best. But I think he's not bad. The problem is now that Donald Trump is proposing two complete morons. Well, one complete moron and one complete ideologue to be on the Federal Reserve. People who have no business running it. I would know more about being on the Federal Reserve than these two. And they are Herman Cain and Stephen Moore. You may remember Herman Cain, Mr. 999 man, the guy who joked about the fact that he couldn't pronounce Uzbekistan. Herman Cain ran for president in 2012, largely for the same reason that Donald Trump ran for president in 2016, to promote his business. He was the former CEO of Godfather's Pizza. That's all he was. He's not an economist. He knows nothing about monetary policy. He's a joke. Stephen Moore, I've debated Stephen Moore. You can find YouTube clips of me going up against Stephen Moore. A little more knowledgeable than Herman Cain, but at heart, Stephen Moore's an ideologue. He's not an expert in monetary policy. He's someone who will just do what Donald Trump wants. But there's lots of dangers in monetary policy. For example, Vietnam War. When you have a big war, you have to raise taxes to pay for it. Lyndon Johnson didn't want to do that. I like Lyndon Johnson for lots of reasons. I don't like his economic policy because what he did is when unemployment was very, very low in the 1960s, he pushed the Federal Reserve to increase the money supply. And that led to the massive inflation and high unemployment of the 1970s. These things don't just come out of nowhere. Do you know why the economy was bad in the 1970s? Partly because of oil, yes. And partly because of the policy of printing a lot of money when you already have low unemployment. It's the wrong thing to do. It's exactly what Donald Trump proposes now. If Donald Trump gets his way, we could have 20% inflation again. And because there's a lag time in economic policy, he could be out of office and he could destroy the American economy for the next 10, 15 years. What's the way to stop these bozos from getting on the Federal Reserve? We have to rely on a Republican Senate. A Republican Senate that's basically ended the filibuster. A Republican Senate where the few people there with conscience, John McCain, who's dead, Jeff Flake, Bob Corker, they're all gone. Ironically, someone who I used to attack on this show, Mitt Romney, has more conscience probably than any other member, any Republican member of the United States Senate. But we need 5 votes to stop what could be a terrible economic collapse. I got a couple callers on the line. Before I bring them on, I just want to say something about the Israeli elections. Yeah, I was disappointed. I think most liberals were. Prime Minister Netanyahu had to reach to the most right-wing, the most racist elements of Israeli society to get his victory. And I'm mad at the left, too. I'm particularly upset with the Arab Israelis who chose not to vote and therefore allowed this right-wing victory to happen. Let that be a lesson. No matter how tough, evil, lawless, horrible Donald Trump and the Republican Party may be, the worst response is to say, I've had enough, I don't trust the system, I'm going home, I'm not going to vote. Wow. That's like someone being angry at you, so you take out a knife and you stab yourself. Talk about counterproductive. If the Arab Israelis had participated in this election, they could have gotten a moderate government. They chose to boycott the election, and now they get the right wing. I fear for Israel's future. I will continue to strongly support the liberal opposition in Israel. But with Netanyahu actually... I mean, he may be indicted soon for his own corruption. I fear that Trumpism is spreading in Israel, in Brazil, in Hungary. We see these right-wing governments rely on a racist appeal to take office, and it really concerns me. That's why we've got to defeat Trump in 2020. All right, let's bring my callers on the line. Facebook audience, you won't be able to hear them, so we'll ask them to keep it short. Let me start with Michael, Old Faithful, from the Bronx.
Hey, Mark. Great to talk with you again.
Good to hear from you, Michael.
Well, for one thing, Trump's saying that our country's full, you can't come in. Yeah, I would say he's full of something else, which I can't say on the air, because it was just a year ago that he was saying, why do we have to have people from S-hole countries, referring to people of color, and said, why can't we have just people from Norway or Australia? So right there, there's a lie. And then you're saying that you can't come in. Duh, just like we got people, Americans, that go overseas on vacations to Europe, the people over there come over to us on vacations. You're going to say that they're not welcome there either? Come on.
Let me sum up, Michael, just because right now the part of our audience can't hear you. So I'll just sum up what you have to say. You're talking about the fact that Donald Trump's immigration policy is racist. And of course, that's what it is. You know, he talks about a wall across the southern border. We never hear about a wall across the northern border. Now, I love Canada. I love Mexico. I think Canadians and Mexicans are both good people. But if you look at the terrorist attacks that have occurred by people who've crossed over a land border, Did you know that they've all come from Canada? There's not a single terrorist attack they can prove from anyone who crossed over the southern border. But the two attacks that I know of, one came across in Vermont, the other in Washington State. The guy from Washington State, I remember, was caught trying to bomb the Los Angeles airport. Now, the Canadian border is more porous than the Mexican border. But let's face it, Donald Trump doesn't have a trouble with Canadians. Canadians are largely white. They speak English or French. They're European. If border security is such an issue, and we have to so much worry about terrorism across the border, and to be blunt, first of all, the vast majority of terrorism is internal. It's right-wing American terrorists going around because they're racist or they're anti-Semitic or they're Islamophobic or whatever it is. They're homophobic. We've seen these mass killings. We know where American terrorists are. Most of them are older white – well, not older. Most of them are white men. That's who they are. That doesn't mean that we don't have an occasional Muslim man or African-American man who commits a terrorist act. But they're almost entirely men. You don't often see women commit mass shootings. And they're mostly white men, and they're mostly people who are born here, not immigrants. But of the people who do come across and commit terrorist acts, they fly here. The September 11th terrorists flew here. And you know what? There's no wall high enough to keep out the airplanes. So, Michael, you're absolutely right. The president's policy is a racist policy. It's not really about immigration. It's certainly not about illegal immigration. It's about keeping out the people that he doesn't want to keep here. If it's about immigration, one has to ask about Donald Trump's wives. Everyone he had and everyone he cheated on. And let's look at Melania. And I mean no harm to Melania. I mean no harm to any immigrant. But the records show that she was an illegal immigrant. She was an undocumented immigrant. When she came here for her modeling career, she didn't have papers. She's exactly who Donald Trump would be after if he weren't racist. Right? If you hate undocumented immigrants. And what did Melania do? She practiced chain migration. She came here. She came here unlawfully. And she used her status here to bring her parents over. So, yeah. Let me go to Reggie, line one in Georgia. Go ahead, Reggie.
A long time to hear from you, too, Mark Levine.
Good to be back.
Great. Good to have you back. Why is President Donald J. Trump going off attacking people in general and minority people in particular, like such as Representative Omar and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who themselves have been getting and receiving death threats as of late from these MAGA hat wearing people, you know, these white supremacists? I mean, we got to stop this before somebody gets hurt or killed.
I'll tell you something, Reggie. You make a good point. Donald Trump, and I can't recall a president of the United States ever doing this. I can think of some examples in Germany or Italy in the 1930s and 40s. But the president of the United States has basically called for a civil war. I mean, you know, even when we had the Great Civil War, the president, Lincoln, obviously opposed the Civil War. He is asking people in his supporters, who are the minority of the country, he's asking them basically to rise up, to take their guns, and to start killing. That's a really scary thing to do, because even though I think the vast majority of Trumpists won't start shooting, how many of them will? How many of them will be just mentally ill enough to listen to the president and start doing mass shootings? It's hard sometimes to discuss Donald Trump because everything is extreme. And yet that's part of what he does. That's part of what the Germans did. It's to make us forget where normal is. And I hope over the next few months we try to bring ourselves back to remember what normal is. This is Mark Levine signing off.